lot of people say, what kind of person should be running my marketing, and how do I find him or her? Because a lot of people who listen to this get excited, but they are engulfed in the day-to-day management of their business, and they don't have time, or they don't think they have time. So I say three things. First of all, ask yourself, what's the highest and best use of my time? In some very technically critical enterprises, managing it is very important. To a lot of businesses, the management isn't as critical. You can hire a manager, but you can't hire a marketer. If you're going to hire a marketer, here's the element you want to look for. He or she must be possibility-oriented. He or she must be logical and pragmatic. He or she must be experimentally-oriented. He or she must be scientifically-oriented, not impulsive or artsy-oriented, because this is a science, not an art form, which is the most wonderful thing about it and why anybody can do it. He or she has got to be able to follow directions. What I would do if I were you would be make a qualified prospect demonstrate to you that he or she has ever built anything from scratch, expanded anything on their own, been entrepreneurial in the past, tried things, built, sustained, and embellished them. If they never have, you don't want to be the first to do that with them. Let somebody else prove them and let them come back to you with their resume documented then. If they have, you then want to play these tapes for them. You want to ask them to sit in your office on their time for one full day and listen to 8 or 10 hours worth of Wizard's Edge. Ask them to take a yellow pad and notes, and ask them, after you've walked them through all your business and given them an overview prior to them listening, what actions, what activities, what strategies, what logical ideas emanated that they would want to do in your business from listening to those tapes, and why? And if they're great and they sound good, then ask them to document a strategy and a priority and a hierarchy, and see if they conform to the lessons and the recommendations and the admonishments that I've given you. If they do, then I would consider hiring that person on a compensation arrangement that was very low fixed and very high variable. By that I mean maybe you give them minimum wage or give them a few $1,000 a month against a very generous variable or bonus arrangement if their actions and their implementations and their executions on the concepts that they learn about in my program and from you produce sustaining profitable results.
Is it going to be easier typically to hire a business manager or hire a marketer?
I think a business manager for most of you is a lot easier than a marketer unless you're very complex. A lot of people have an inflated view of the value of our business management and an undervalued view of how significant more attention to your marketing function would be to your enterprise and your bottom line and your net worth and your freedom and your certainty and your life fulfillment.
But it's a little harder, isn't it, to take your hands off of something you already have them on? It kind of goes back to earlier in the interview that to hire someone to do things where you're not the most productive is sometimes fearful.
Yeah, it is. But you also got to say, what's the highest and best use of my time? Where do I have leverage? If I keep managing, and let's say I'm 90% what I want to be, but I can hire an 80%er for a very affordable amount. If I can hire an 80%er and I can spend all my time growing customers, growing profits, growing other products or services that I could sell, and that could improve my business three or four times over, a 10% dilution in management skill probably isn't that critical. And, mm-hmm. And who's to say that I wouldn't find somebody who was better? Because a lot of people who manage aren't good managers. They're spending three times the effort and time to get one half the result that somebody else might.
I could be real proud of my management because that's hard for me.
Well, you got to realize, when at the end of the day, you own the business, who cares who gets the glory if you get the profit and the pleasure?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're basically hung up because you want to have control and working 12 hours ineffectually on management instead of 12 hours maximally effectually on marketing is what you want, then keep doing it, Marty.
Okay. How about four real quick answers to the questions, and then we'll call it a day.
Okay, I'll do real quickies. I've already talked about the books I recommend, haven't I?
We did a number of interviews ago. Do you want to mention those quickly
really
again?
Great. Here's a couple that I think you should all read. My Life in Advertising and Scientific Advertising by Claude Hopkins. Think and Grow Rich by Napoleon Hill. The Lazy Man's Way to Riches by Joe Carbo. Breakthrough Advertising by Eugene Schwartz. Confessions of an Advertising Man by David Ogilvy. Ogilvy on Advertising by David Ogilvy. Tested Advertising Techniques by John Caples. Direct Mail and Mail Order Handbook by Dick Hodgson, H-O-D-G-S-O-N. How to Make Money in Mail Order by Melvin Powers. The Greatest Direct Mail Sales Letters of All Time by Dick Hodgson. How to Make Your Advertising Make Money by John Caples. How to Write a Good Advertisement by Vic Schwab. And the Robert Collier Letter Book by Robert Collier. The question is, how can I reduce the number of times my telemarketers are cut short and hung up on? A lot of people who try to do telemarketing have very bad initial experiences, and that's a function of the mindset you go into. Your telemarketers shouldn't go in it as telemarketers. They should go into it as advisors calling to offer valuable consultative insight and benefit, irrespective of whether that customer or prospect ever buys from them. They should call because you have information, ideas, knowledge, education that can help that prospect improve their life, reduce their risk, enhance their profits, and magnify their pleasure. And you owe it to share that information and some free ideas on how to do it going in. If that's the motivation for their call, they will very rarely be turned off if they really see their purpose as doing that.
Interesting.
Do we still have time?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay. People say, well, what's a realistic expectation of the percentage response I can expect from my direct mailing? And I say there's no realistic expectation. I don't look at it as percentage. I look at it profit. Who cares whether you only get a 0.5% response if you quadruple your money every time you mail, and on that quadruple profit you end up buying 100 new customers every time you mail, and those 100 customers bring you 10 more purchases a year and make you 1,000% return on your initial investment. Don't get hung up. A lot of people stop mailing because they don't get the yield they want. They want 10% or 20% response, which is almost unheard of. I have produced those numbers rarely, rarely. Great response to a mailing is oftentimes 3%, 4%, 0.5%. Depends on the product, the proposition. You're trying to get them to buy, you're trying to get them to come in, you're trying to get them to call in, you're trying to get them to send for a free report, a free consultation. And there's no cut and dry, so don't look at percentages. Look at profit. Look at customers. Look at lifetime value. One more. And I want to find the absolute best one more, Marty. This is for a lot of professionals. How do I get over the professional ethic that says, thou shalt not advertise? I don't believe advertising for professionals is that important. I think educating your public is very important. If you have the opportunity to educate people through space ads or through PR or through seminars or through tapes or reports, I think it's a wonderful opportunity. For example, we had a surgeon, a proctologist, one time who mounted a series of very educational advertisements trying to help warn people about colon cancer. And his business tripled in the process, but he was able, in tripling his business, to save something like 1,000 people's lives because people were able to identify indicators or symptoms of colon cancer well ahead of it becoming a terminal problem. And he felt more gratitude and pride about being able to save those lives than make the money, but he saw that he had a justification for using media as an educational vehicle to bring knowledge to people, and if people saw that knowledge resonated to a situation in their life, compelled them to seek him out for advice on a risk-free basis.
What are the techniques to use that concept in other areas? It basically is to, again, educate your customer.
The goal is to educate. If you're the only one educating people and giving them direction and giving them advice and giving them actionable information, they can profit or save or improve or protect themselves with, and then you offer them a greater, deeper level of assistance or education, or you offer them to learn more about the product or service that you offer, but you've already educated them on ways to use it and things they can do in their life, they tend to be very bonded to you. They tend to trust you, particularly if you share in the process of this education information that gives them free ideas they can use whether they never, ever, ever deal with you or not.
All right. Jay, thanks for your time. How about I ask you one question for 3 minutes?
What is it?
What is the question that you want to have been asked but never have been? I mean, you certainly must have a feeling for that.
I'm not sure I have, but I'll try to think for a moment, Marty.
Okay.
The question that
It seems to me as people are querying you, many times you know what they're looking for, and my guess is with your insight, in a way, you could step into their shoes and ask questions for them.
The question I wish people would ask is, what one change over everything else will bring more improvement, results, profit, prosperity, and pleasure to my business life? And I would say it's changing the focus of what you're doing and why you're doing it for. A lot of people come to me and say, what things do I have to do to get people to buy? And I say, it's not things. It's what service or value do you have to give? I hosted a party with my wife yesterday for one of her charitable civic groups, and it was really interesting. At the end, a lot of people said, this was the most wonderful party. You look like you had so much fun. And I said, I have. I said, my goal when we do a party is that for 3 hours in people's lives, I want it to be the most pleasurable diversion from the insanity of their day, from the pressure, from the problems, from the mundanity. I want them to feel special, and I want them to be happy, and I want it to be fun, and I want to basically contribute at every level I can to make the process joyous, and I want this to be memorable and something very pleasurable, where they're a star, where they meet really wonderful people, where I introduce people who are wallflowers, where I'm attentive to them, where I make them feel as special as they are, because I think that's our purpose in life. And I think when that becomes your purpose or derivatives of that, your whole pleasure, prosperity, profit, and practices will change, Marty.
How do you make them feel special?
By recognizing that they are special. It starts with the premise, the foundation, that everyone is special. Everybody's important. Everyone is unique. Everybody is valuable. Everyone is, everyone's got something to share. I know that I grow by interacting with people. I know that if I spend time with you, I am enriched for it. I know that you have something to share with me, either ideas, information, perspectives, friendship, and I want to gain that, and I want to reciprocate because I want to give back to you. It's an attitude.
All right. Well, I hope that people today found the Wizards. That's just a little bit of a party. We'll look forward to next time, Jay.
Thanks, Marty.
Talking with Jay Abraham, marketing genius, on this edition of The Wizard's Edge. See you next time. Bye-bye. Welcome to The Wizard's Edge with marketing genius Jay Abraham, the wizard himself. This is Marty Stacey, consumer advocate for The Wizard's Edge. Jay, it's great to be talking to you again on The Wizard's Edge. I've come to the conclusion if someone takes just one or two of the principles we talk about on any given tape, they're liable to increase their profits 20 to 30%. Is that a fair assessment?
It's probably a conservative assessment, Marty. It depends on how well they have really been maximizing their business activities and opportunities. Most people grotesquely under-leverage everything they do. By that I mean they utilize their opportunities, their assets, their resources about a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of its real capacity, just by helping them avoid the mistakes and stop making those errors. You automatically give people boosts, and if you stop them from making 10 or 20 errors, that's 10 or 20 improvements, and if each one is 2 or 3 or 5%, some of the ones you'll find are 100%, you give people massive improvements just by eliminating the things they're doing wrong. So, yeah, it could be massive and profound.
All right, let's continue with the program we began last time. You were talking about your 100 most frequently asked questions. Some of these questions keep coming up. Do you ever get bored answering them?
No, I don't, because I know that the people I'm sharing the insight with are people who are genuinely struggling to find a better way. They're people who are genuinely motivated to getting to higher ground. They really want to get more yield for their effort, get more result for less effort, have more joy, and they don't know how to do it on their own. So my ability to share with them the path I've already taken and the experiences I've already have and make it easier for them is very rewarding for me.
All right. Just jump in again with your list of the 100 most frequently asked questions for Jay Abraham.
One of the very, very most often posed questions, Marty, is what should be my first step? People hear all these options and they have this incredible smorgasbord and they say, what in the world should I do first? Well, my answer is first decide to be proactive rather than reactive. Choose to take steps to leverage your business and get the most yield out of what you're doing. Then walk through and find not the biggest, but the easiest, most immediate, and no effort or low effort activity
you can implement or effect that will give validation to you that these processes and principles really work. In other words, there's lots of things that I have shared with people over the last few months in the Wizard's Edge. There'll be a lot more that I will share. But when you hear something, don't say, wow, that's exciting, I'm going to do that first. Say to yourself instead, what's the easiest thing I can do immediately? For a lot of people, I give them the following. If you are running ads, try changing the headline. If you are running ads, try adding a more specific and compelling risk reversal or guarantee. If you are running ads, try having an upsell or an addition incorporated right there, a bonus, if you will, that they can either pay for or just add to the sale if they transact it immediately. If you have salespeople in the field or on the phone, have them experiment immediately with approaching people differently in their initial conversation, because that's the equivalent of a headline. See what happens. Test different prices. Test different risk reversals or guarantees. Test different packaging, sizes, quantities, qualities, or combinations. See what happens. All those things are instantaneous. You can have results and answers before the end of today, before the end of today, Marty. And by getting feedback and hopefully by getting massive validation of the power and the profitability of these principles, you will be excited about doing more and more and more. But make a list of the five or six easiest, most immediate, least effort, least expense activities you can incorporate today, immediately, this week, and do it. If you have inactive customers or clients, get on the phone and call them. Call them with an ear towards trying to find out why they haven't been back or patronized you for a long time. Ask them if you've done them a disservice, or ask them if something's happened in their life that's caused them not to be able or interested in continuing doing business with you. If you'll do just that for a week, the odds are you can boost your business by 20 to 50% in that month alone. And when you see validation, when your bank account swells, when your customers embrace you more enthusiastically, you cannot help but be motivated to do more.
Jay, we have kind of combined a number of questions together, so I'm going to ask you just to go on to the next question. I can always want you to do a two-hour seminar, and any question, I'll discipline myself not to do that.
Well, you have to understand, I can. When I do my intensive 3- and 5-day training programs, I tell people, I go through an enormous quantity of depth on a lot of these subjects, and I explain to them, I could do a full day on anything, and I would not be doing you a disservice. I'd be doing you an incredible service. The thing to realize about what I share is that anyone has the capacity to dramatically alter on a positive basis the fate, destiny, and profitability of your enterprise and the pleasure it gives you. Our goal is to give you so many combinations that you can construct or weave for yourself the optimal design, the optimal pattern, the optimal approach that gives you the most yield you can get for the lifestyle, the effort, and the investment, both financial, time, and emotion and energy that you want to make. You have the option to custom design your business results and life the way you want it. And I don't mean to get on extensive tangents, but it's very important for me to make that point.
You know, that is one thing that I had thought maybe we have not even emphasized enough, that when you're sharing the wealth of information you do, that you have to latch on to one particular thing and run with it.
Well, the neat thing about it is I've learned, I was telling someone I'm the ultimate generalist because I understand 400 industries. I understand probably hundreds of different approaches to get you to a goal, an objective, a target result. The trick to realize is that what works or what is enjoyable or what is manageable for one person may be repugnant to somebody else. I'm sitting here at home. I have an office I never go to. I'm wearing gym shorts and a polo shirt, no shoes or socks, and I'm sitting lounging, drinking a bottle of sparkling water, and I have no interest whatsoever donning a suit, going into an office, doing 8 to 5. I do things that are highly leveraged. I want to do things that produce for me the highest residual yield for the least amount of time and effort and the least amount of management requirements. Other people love going into an office. Other people love working 12 hours a day. You have to figure out what's right for you. Some people love direct selling and having a sales force and managing people. Other people have no interest whatsoever, and they need to resort to direct mail or display ads or manufacturers' reps or some kind of a passive arm's length way of communicating. You have to find the right combination that works for you and engineer your success accordingly. Also, most people never think, Marty, about what their vision of success is supposed to look like. Let me get on a tangent because I don't think we ever talked about this. Let's say you are a company that currently has 1,000 customers and you're doing $200,000 a year. Each customer is doing approximately $200 a year in business. It may be one sale, it may be three sales on average. It doesn't really matter. And you decide, I want to be, I'm a $200,000 business, I want to be a $1 million business. Well, you got to decide what the requirements of that goal really are, because it can be much more onerous than you think unless you pencil it out and then reverse engineer it. Based on what you know right now, if all you know is that you have 1,000 customers doing $200,000, that means the average customer does about $200 with you. To grow to $1 million, you would have to add five times the number of customers if nothing else changes. Isn't that right? To add five times the customers, you may have to add three times the facilities, three or four or five times the people, three or four or five times the inventory. A lot of things that you may not want to really deal with and never thought about. I basically try to recognize what has to happen for me to achieve my goal based on the current factors that exist in my business, and then I look at better ways to accelerate it, to reduce the effort, the expense, the timeline, and the manpower, and I look at the highest and best alternative uses I have. You have to do that too, for those of you listening in. You have to say to yourself, well, it's great Jay's talking about direct mail, but I don't want to do direct mail. It's okay. But just as you don't want to, some other person listening is saying, wow, I love direct mail. I don't want a sales force. You've got to be able to realize you have the opportunity, the pleasure, and the responsibility of creating the ultimate combination of factors, methods, and approaches that produce for you your optimum business strategy and situation. And optimum for you does not necessarily mean you make $10 million. You may be content making $237,000 but only having to work 3 hours a day. You may be content growing your business triple by not really adding more customers, but finding other things you can introduce to your customers from other companies so you don't have the overhead, the selling expense, you know, the space requirements. You got to figure out what you want, but you have to realize you can actually have exactly what you want. You are no longer forced or compelled to operate your business or your life by society or your industry's typical rules, and I think that's liberating.
Can you tell us how a little more to flesh that out, how to dimensionalize obtaining that freedom?
Yeah, sure. First thing is you got to figure out, as I said, what you really want. Most people have never focused in a very finite and tangible way on what they're trying to get to. If you say, I want more success, that's pretty nebulous. What is your goal and what does it look like? So first thing is figure out, what do you want and what does it look like? And then what it looks like, you have to say, what does it take to get there? So let's just take, let's say your goal right now, you're making $100,000 and your goal is to make $300,000. Then you got to ask yourself, well, if nothing else changes, if I don't improve on anything else in my business but just increase the numbers, what has to happen? And that's when you look and say, okay, right now I'm doing 1,000 customers. They're generating on average $200 a customer a year. That's $200,000. If I'm making $100,000 on that, if I want to make three times that, I have to have three times the sales at the same margins, right?
Right.
And so you got to start by what you know now. If I don't do anything else, I got to have three times the customers. What has to happen to do that? Well, right now I have one salesperson, hypothetically, that's generating 1,000 customers. I would need three salespersons because this person is working at capacity. What's it take to do that? You got to work backwards. I'd have to pay them a salary or a draw plus this, plus a car, plus expenses, plus space, plus office, plus phone, plus – and then you walk back. And when you see what it looks like the conventional way, then you start getting excited and say, what other alternatives have I available to shorten the timeline, to eliminate the laborious side, to reduce – the manpower and expense, and that's when you start playing with combinations. What if instead of having a salesperson to find me 1,000 more customers, I put a very powerful referral generating program into place that got my 1,000 existing customers to each refer me two. With no sales force other than just order takers, I might be able to get myself another 2,000. Do you see what I'm saying?
I see.
You start asking yourself, what are the options I have available if I want to reach new customers? Well, I can run display ads, and then you evaluate. What's the upside? What's the down? What's it going to cost? What's the positive? What's the negative based on my existing business and my comfort levels? What are the next options? I can, A, send direct mail. Do I know how to? How can I use direct mail? And you know the options. You can use direct mail to generate leads. You can do it to sell. You can use it to precede a live salesperson or a telephone call or any combination. You can use it to penetrate new niches. You can use it to penetrate new markets. And it's very exciting. It's not laborious. It's exciting because you have all these options and you're able to pick. It's like me taking you to the ultimate. Did you ever go to one of these luxurious, really five-star hotels on a Sunday with your family for a glorious brunch that cost $30 a person?
Yes.
It's wonderful. I mean, you couldn't possibly eat it all, but it didn't matter, depending on your mood, whether you were massively hungry, whether you want delicacies. You could choose and pick whatever you wanted to satisfy your palate and your tastes this moment. We have the same option with your business, and you have the option of changing. Right now, for example, maybe you've been a workaholic. Maybe you're exhausted. Maybe you don't want to make a lot more money. You just want to free yourself up so you can have a lot more time with your wife and your young children. But maybe in 3 or 4 years, those kids get older and they're in their own life and your wife basically gets real active in civic stuff or some other change occurs where you now have the time and the passion. You want to get deeper involved. Well, then you can modify or you can throw into full board, you know, some of the other concepts that you have currently tabled or put into suspended abeyance until it's appropriate. You have such profound flexibility at all times. Is that confusing or clarifying?
No, I think that's clarifying. And in a way, the wizard's edge is to give leverage, to give more conceptualizing power to people as they look at their options.
Yeah, I think what we should do, and I think we will do it in one of the future issues, Marty, is we'll create a template. We'll create a planning, a process. We'll create an option grid so that every person listening can easily figure out what the most proper, appropriate, powerful, and profitable options they should be focusing on today relative to their business situation, who they are, where they're strong, where they're weak, what they want money-wise, effort-wise, what they've got to give as far as time, emotion, capital, skill sets, and have them see all the wonderful ways they can really bring this together in their own very personalized and individually specific situational approach. I think that'll be pretty exciting. We'll do that one of these issues.
All right. Jay, we only have a limited amount of time here, of course. Can I ask you to just jump through as many questions as we can, finish out the 100, this program? Is that impossible?
Absolutely. Sure. Absolutely. Let's just go for it, okay?
Yeah.
Okay, a lot of people, it's a natural complement to the previous question. They say, how can I guarantee my success? Well, the first way to guarantee success is to make a commitment to never do anything impetuously or through conjecture, to always be willing to test conservatively every premise, every supposition, every concept, every approach you're contemplating, because if you do, you will find out very quickly whether it works or doesn't. For example, we just came out with what we thought was going to be one of the most wonderful and profitable products imaginable. And before I sent out 1,000 sales letters, I tried 5,000 to my list, 5,000 to a newsletter list that I'm known in, and 5,000 to a list of very, very discriminating cassette tape buyers. It worked extremely well to one list. It worked very moderate to another, and it bombed in another, telling me that the one list it worked to, I had a particular affinity with. That list we continued and made a very handsome profit. The rest of it we stopped, and we stopped the project because it didn't have expandability. Instead of making it a dog and bombing and losing money by mailing it all over, we turned it into a controlled small profit center. We made about $80,000 and stopped it before it lost us a lot of money, and used that $80 to fund other more expansive things. But you just got to use your mind and use logic and prudence, and let testing be your guiding beacon, your friend, your vigilant counterbalance, that factor that keeps you from mortgaging the farm, from doing something dangerous, from making a decision or an action that can end up costing you. And if you do it, then you'll never make a mistake. You'll always be a marketing expert extraordinaire and a genius at everything you do. You'll always get the maximum yield for the maximum and the maximum profit, the maximum customers, the maximum pleasure from everything you do. But you got to test things. So that's the way you guarantee your success.
Very interesting.
Somebody asked me, how do I set prices for my hidden assets that I want to sell off? Let's say that you find in your business that you have a lot of overlooked assets and opportunities that you can sell off, and most of them are going to be intangible. For example, let's say that you are a company that has been running very successful display advertising for years and years just for your business, and you realize that ads that you've stopped running are still very, very powerful and could be used by all kinds of people in the same field. So you decide, hey, I'd like to sell or rent or lease these ads to people outside my marketplace in the same kind of a business. But what do I charge for it? Or, I'm going to give you another example. Let's say that you look within your business at all the processes you do, the way you manage, the way you control your inventory, the way you reduce, if you're in production and manufacturing, waste or rejects, the way you mobilize people, the way you get more yield per salesperson, the way you get more profit per sale or something like that. You would then realize every one of those processes is a concept, is an asset, is something you could sell or lease or rent to people in similar fields of endeavor outside of your competitive marketplace, and also people in related ones. In other words, if you're a distributor of hardware products in the state of Indiana, you might have a lot of techniques you've mastered you could sell to other hardware distributors who do not sell to Indiana, but you could also probably modify them and license or sell or rent or lease those same processes to other kinds of non-hardware distributors if they have direct application. There's tons of things like that. And the question is, how in the world do I know how to sell them, what to ask for, and not under or overprice it? That's a good question, isn't it?
Well, it's a very good question.
You want to know the answer?
I sure do.
Okay, the answer is this. The first approach is you got to quantify what its value is to you, and you've got to be able to then project what its worst case minimum value could be to someone else who would acquire it. In other words, you got to say, what's this ad, for example, or what have these ads been worth to my business when I run them? And if you know that when you run the ad, it produces a 350% front-end profit, and on that 350% front-end profit, it generates on average 1,000 new customers a month, and on those 1,000 new customers a month, you know the residual profit they will produce in the first year that they are buying from you is $100,000, then you've got a basis for figuring out, worst case, what an ad is worth on a monthly basis or an annual basis. And you have a basis to go to somebody and say, well, let me ask you this question. If I could produce for you 1,000 new customers a month and $100,000 of profit a month for a year, basically 12,000 new customers and $1,200,000 worth of pre-tax profit, what would that be worth to you? And you start with a basis, and they would probably say, oh, I don't know, $300,000. And you could say, well, that's great, but that's probably more than you should pay for this. And you have a basis to come down on. Then you can say, well, I think I should start by asking you for, and then you've got three options. You can have a buyout. You can let them try it for a month, and if they like it, make them buy it out for a lump sum. The lump sum should be a lesser fraction of what it's worth to them so that they can easily appreciate and understand it, and as an investor, see a very high multiple return on investment that they will recapture within a few months or a year at the outset. So, example, you might say, okay, it's going to produce for you, if it tests out $1 million in profit, I want $100,000 for it, which is a 10-to-1 first-year return. But I'll let you try it out for $1,000 for the first month, or $1,000 a month for 3 months. At the end of 3 months, you have two choices. You can abandon using it, or you can buy the whole thing out for $100,000, and I'll give you payments on it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
But you've got other options. Or you can say, I want a share of the, and then you can fill in the blank, of the profits that come from it, of the number of customers that come from it, or a percentage of the gross sales that comes from it, or I want every time you make an insertion, I'll give you all these flexible ways to do it. Every time you do an insertion and run the ad again, I want a flat rate, or I want 25% of the ad cost that you spend. You have all kinds of options. The trick is finding a compensation arrangement that the company or the professional, if you are a professional licensing your professional techniques or processes, cannot say no to. And then whatever the offer is, you reduce it down through risk reversal to an easy, non-threatening way they can test it. You let them try it out for a month. You let them try it out for a quarter. You let them try out for one ad. You let them try out for one sales group. You let it try out for a couple of procedures. You let them try it out in one department. And let them prove to themselves that it works. And if it doesn't, then you either return the nominal tryout fee that you've asked them for, or you let them out of the deal, or you give them a prorated back. It's being very flexible. There's no right or wrong way to sell things. I've sold things for lump sum. I've sold things for percentage of the profit. I've sold things for so much a customer generated. I've sold things for a profit participation. I've sold things for so much per person using it. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you make a handsome profit, but you let the user, the company or the professional that you would sell, rent, or lease the concept or the processes to, make a far more handsome return. It's got to be very lucrative for the other side, or it's not to their advantage. So you want them to get massive returns, and you want them to recapture their investment very quickly. Does that make sense?
All right. Yeah, good strategy. It sounds to me like we need to do a licensing seminar here.
Well, as I told you, I could do detail.
Okay, jump into the next question.
Okay, it's simple, but how can I get better results with the same amount of effort and money? Well, it's obviously by using the upside leverage of marketing. Most people don't realize that everything you do can be measured, quantified, and improved. It is highly unlikely that whatever you are doing right now to generate customers or clients, to close or sell those customer or clients, and to regenerate business from those customers or clients is anywhere close to the highest, best producing approaches or alternatives you have available. But most people assume that if they're doing okay or they're making money, they are content. I am ruthless on non-assumption. I don't want to assume anything. I want to know definitively. Why would you want to go to work and spend 8 hours a day and a finite amount of capital and human capital and receive 40% less yield from an ad than you could? Why would you want to get 50% less average sale from a customer or a client than you could or should? Why would you want to get one-fourth of the repurchases than you should or you could? And you've got to keep trying new things. And it's a flip on testing, but you've got to realize that there are a lot of better approaches. And until, I think we went through the three ways to grow a business in a previous interview, didn't we?
Yes, I recall that.
You got to go back to that. You got to say, okay, let's just see. The first way is grow a customer. I have 25 options. How many am I doing? How many have I ever tried? How many can I combine together? Shouldn't I start testing alternative ways to see if, in fact, the approach I have been content with, the approach I have been using, is, in fact, the most profitable and productive one? So that's what you do.
All right. Go ahead. Give us some more questions here.
Somebody asked me, a lot of people do little ads. Do you have any ad construction techniques for creating classified ads? Yeah, classified ad is almost a pure and a total headline play. It's realizing the following. All a classified ad has to be is a powerful headline to make you a lot of money, whether it's an ad selling something or an ad employing someone. I mean, a classified ad can make you an incredible profit if by running it you can attract the right human capital, the right salespeople, the right consulting people, the right operational people, the right technical people. It can make you a small or a very large profit. The key to a classified ad is it is nothing more than a headline. And as a headline, it's got to embody and pose an extremely clear and extremely powerful and extremely finite self-serving result that the reader the intended reader only, not anybody, but the intended reader you're trying to target can be galvanized and attracted to and can want. It's got to be a result that they want so badly they can't help but read the ad, pick up the phone, or go to your location. And good examples are how to triple your income and build a career where you've got three times the respect and 10 times the growth potential and five times the challenge working 20% less a year. We need, you know, if you're, I mean, and it can be under a category like scientists or research people or plant managers or whatever, or how to achieve the career result you've been after, both the income and the respect and the satisfaction and the contribution. And you basically, you write headlines to people. Headlines are telegraphs to the right person of a promise, of a result, of a big benefit, of some accomplishment, of some advantage or some protection. How to make sure you're fully employed and happy and making substantial money up to the day you retire. You know, we're looking for a lifetime position. We're looking for somebody to grow. We reward contribution. Our average executive has been there 30 years and grows, you know, through the – and just go through like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and you can test that, too, inexpensively.
You can test it for penny. You can test it for a few dollars. In one day, you know if it works or not.
Yeah.
Okay. One big question people ask is, what can I do outside of my business to make more money? There are a lot of people who really, even though they have a business that's profitable, they're tired of it. They're looking for new challenges. They're looking for new horizons. They want something fun. They want to know what they can do outside. Well, there's a lot of things you can do. Number one, you can use the techniques that I have taught and shared and will be teaching and sharing in subsequent and past interviews, and you can go to anybody else you want. You can do joint ventures. You can do consulting. You can acquire assets. I mean, one of the most lucrative things I've done over the years and I've gotten people to do is go to marginal businesses that are almost out of business, make deals with them to acquire their customers, not the business, but their customers for an ongoing perpetual share of the revenue. Let's say that they agree to pay 20% of the gross or 20% of the profits for life. Take those customers and flip them or sell them to another person or company in a similar business, but instead of selling them for the 20%, sell them for 30% and work on the spread. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yes, I understand what you're saying.
You go to almost any company. Almost any company has a windfall jackpot and an overlooked asset they're not taking advantage of. Many people have these processes and concepts that they don't even realize they're sitting on. Almost every company does something better than almost everybody else they compete against. They have to stay in business because it's so competitive. They don't know it. Maybe they're better at hiring. Maybe they're better at managing. Maybe they're better at using capital. Maybe they're better at advertising. Maybe they're better at selling. Maybe they're better at producing. Maybe they're better at tax strategies. Whatever they're better at, you can find out through interviewing them and through examining their business, find out what they are, and you can identify and gain the rights to those processes, and you could be a rights and process broker. You could license, sell, and broker licenses, rights, concepts, techniques all over the world. I mean, I guess a lot of things, but that's what I tell people to do.
All right. All right.
Interesting, isn't it?
Yes.
Okay. Good. How can I overcome procrastination? Most people have a terrible, terrible, terrible problem getting started. If they do get started, they get plateaued and they can't progress. I break it down to a very simple process. First of all, and this is something I learned from some of my friends in neuro-linguistic conditioning, Tony Robbins, for example, and it's pleasure and pain, pleasure and pain. You got to visualize the pain associated with continuing the way you are versus the pleasure that's promised by taking action. You got to basically say, well, why do I, am I content with where I am? If the answer is yes, you don't have a lot of motivation or leverage. If I'm not, you got to say, well, what about this am I not content with? And you got to say, I don't want to get up on Monday morning and be ambivalent. I don't want to be overwhelmed. I don't want to be out of control. I don't want to work every hour for and every minute for 10 hours a day, 6 days a week, and not get ahead. I don't want to have my competitors eating my lunch. I don't want to feel like I've spent 15 rounds with Mike Tyson and I got to do it again tomorrow. So you got to ask, what do you want? Well, I want control. I want to work less. I want more prestige, more fun, more satisfaction, more this, more that. Okay, well, if you know what you don't want and what you want, that's a beginning, don't you think?
Yes, that's an excellent beginning.
Then you start to say, okay, what's going to get me there? And then you start being true to yourself. Well, doing more of what I'm doing isn't. In other words, if I'm working 10 hours a day just to get by, if I work 12 hours a day, that's probably not going to do a lot more except frustrate me and bring me to nervous breakdown or a heart attack faster, do you think?
Right.
So you got to have a new strategy. Unless I change my strategy, I'm not going to change my results. I mean, it's a progression. You go from pain, pleasure, to what I do and don't want, to a recognition and reconciling yourself. Hey, I can't get where I want to be unless I change the way I'm doing things. Then you go through the options and you evaluate. If I do this, what will the most likely option be, both on a pain and pleasure? And you find those activities that are the most pleasurable and will get you closest to where you're trying to get. Does that make sense?
Okay, yeah. So many of the things that you explain, after you explain them, I think, oh, well, it had to be that way.
Well, then I'm going to give you the last thing, and it's so simple it's embarrassing. And I wish I could tell you it's original, but it's a simple story. It's what I call the list. Then when you figure out what you got to do to get where you want to be, you make a list of the 10 or 20 most important actions. Then on that list, you enumerate or you prioritize them. If you only do one of them, which one is the absolute most important to be doing today?
Okay.
And why? And you tell yourself why. You don't just sort of make it abstract, but you know why. And you and all you do today is the one top thing on the list. And if you get it all done, then you do the next most important. And you don't do anything else unless there's an emergency or a crisis until you do the 10 or the 9 or the 7 remaining things on the list. If you just do that and nothing else, I guarantee you, in 45 days or less, you will become approximately 3 times more effective and efficient, and you will eliminate procrastination.
You speak as if you've seen this in people's lives.
Well, obviously. I mean, why do you think, if I can tell you that the techniques that I've shared and the philosophies I've observed and the experiences I've encountered are very real. I have $4 billion worth of successes I have either directly or indirectly contributed to, either through working with people or inspiring them to do it themselves. But when that's the good sign. The bad sign is out of 10,000 people, or 20,000, excuse me, I've worked with, probably 5,000 have done something and 15,000 have thought about doing something. Why do 5,000 do something and 15 don't? I've spent a lifetime asking the question and studying the results and identifying the embodying factors that make achievers achieve and non-achievers procrastinate.
Hmm. Do you have a conclusion after all of that
yes.
analysis?
Yeah. We intimidate ourselves. We don't realize how easy and pleasurable achievement can be. We don't realize the effort we spend festering on how intimidating all the options are is much more effort and much more emotion than just doing it. It's almost like the old adage, how do you eat an elephant?
Mm-hmm.
One bite at a time. And you start. You start in the right place. You start in the right place, and you do the most important. See, the concept that's got to pervade your life, Marty, is the concept of leverage. Leverage, leverage. You don't do the thing that's going to – I mean, there's a lot of things we do that don't get us anywhere that should be either deferred or subordinated to somebody else. A lot of us want to be everything, and we're afraid to let other people do it because they won't do it as well as we do.
Okay.
But the truth of the matter is many of the things that we keep fanatical control on are inconsequential in the scope and the outcome of events. And if somebody else were given and entrusted the job and they only did 80% as well as we would, but we were able to use our full capacity on the really leverageable key activities and areas of our business, we would gain so much more achievement. Does that make sense?
Okay, but let me argue with you. Let me advocate here. What if I'm afraid of that that's a dream?
Well, okay. So, I mean, don't you owe it to yourself? I mean, see, fear is only possible when you have uncertainty. I mean, you should find out whether something is true or not, don't you think?
Okay.
You can find out very quickly by trying a simple experiment, i.e. a test, can't you?
Okay.
Why would you live your whole life in fear or delusionary uncertainty when in a day or a week or a month you can have definitive truth and proof? And I can tell you this. Maybe it's not as good as I say, but it's very rarely going to be as bad as you think. Somewhere between, if nirvana. If basically, you're down here and my hand is on the ground and I'm up here and my hand is on the ceiling, and you're saying, well, it can't be. And I'll say, okay, let's say it can't. But until you try and execute correctly, you're never going to know. But let's say you're partially right and I'm partially wrong. I'll still get you halfway between us, and that's about 10 times better than you are. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah, I would say almost anyone listening to The Wizard's Edge probably can greatly profit from doing that. I don't think most people have tried that.
We are, and this is trite, but it's true, we're our worst enemy. It's not competition. It's not foreign intervention. It's not government. It's not taxation and regulation. It's us. I mean, you have more opportunity right now than probably ever if you've listened to the ideas I've shared with you, because I've basically embodied, summarized, and simplified $4 billion worth of success secrets. If you are a $10 billion company, it might be really hard to get a breakthrough. But if you are a $1 million company or a $500,000 company or a professional doing $300,000 or $400,000 or a service company doing six or seven figures, I would think that just the joy and the challenge and the high probability of following through with all this would be so compelling that you couldn't help but not at least give it a try. But you got to have a systematic, you got to have a strategy, because without a strategy, Marty, at most you'll be ineffectual. More effective maybe than you are now, but still ineffectual. You need a strategy, and the strategy has to base itself on leverage priorities and on keeping your eye on the ball. If there are 47 things you could do, you have to say, what is the most important action or activity on that list that I must do today? And then when you're done with that, what is the next most important? And if you never get to the 47th, who cares?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Makes sense. Go on to some more questions here.
Okay. Somebody asked me one time, what marketing accomplishment am I the most proud of? I think my ability to have identified the marginal net or lifetime value of a customer and help people realize that, because that has liberated, that has transformed, that has massively improved the wealth and the prosperity of thousands of people I've been able to influence, because I've showed them, look, you're not looking at this in its totality. You're just looking at the moment. Let's look at what it means to you if you bring another customer in, even if you don't make any money. How many times will that customer buy over the next month, over the next year, over the next decade? What will those purchases represent, worst case, to you? And when people start realizing that, it changes totally the long-term view and the long-term commitment and the investment, both effort and expense they're willing to make in acquiring a customer. I'm very proud of that. Should I continue?
Yes.
I've been asked, what approaches can I use to acquire joint venture partners, collaborative associates who will bring assets and attributes to my business activities? I've had some very interesting experiences, good and not so good, with joint venture partners. And I think you've got to, first of all, make it clear what each side is supposed to bring. I think, number two, you got to basically target people who add something you don't have. I think you've got to go into them enthusiastically but realistically. You've got to basically have very serious discussion and reduce it into written form of what each side is expected to do and what each side is expected to get for that effort and what penalty occurs if each side does not perform as promised. And you've got to figure the duration. I like conditional. I've had some really great experiences and some bad problems making it too easy for people who didn't fulfill on their end, and it's been difficult to extricate myself. And I've learned that you should make people continually earn their right. In other words, if I say I'm going to finance something, you may not want that person to have an interest in your enterprise forever. You may want to give him or her an extraordinary lucrative interest in the revenue coming from their investment for a finite period of time. You may say, I'll give you 40% of the profit from the customers coming from the salespeople we hire for the first year that I do it, but I'll give you the revenue stream for 5 years. But you may not want that person to be part of your whole business forever. Keep in mind, you have the right to make the rules. Once you understand the value you bring, normally that will be so substantial that lots of qualified people with skills, with abilities, with capital, with influence will be eager to associate with you, and you can structure and denominate the kind of deal you want to go into. But I always like, I mean, today, after being many times burned being a deluded optimist, I like provisional, conditional, earn-in, earn-out type deals, meaning you don't just give somebody a share of perpetuity. You make them perform, and you make their progression conditional on certain things happening, and you always maintain the rights to terminate or extricate or stop the relationship on some kind of a satisfactory basis. You may basically say, I'll give you half interest of or 10% interest in every project we do together, but when I want to stop, I will stop, and all you'll get is a trail from the last project we did. You may say, anytime I want, I can buy you out for your investment plus 20% for every quarter we've been in association. But you got to have an exit strategy in case the relationship doesn't work out, because relationships have an unfortunately frequent tendency to get lopsided. One person ends up doing a lot more than the other. It was never really clearly agreed upon. There were never provisions made for what happens if that occurs, either the percentage changes or the deal ends, and you get stuck with a real messy situation, and you start resenting each other. And if it's clearly delineated before it starts what your options are, and it's on paper, and it's mutually agreed upon, and you've thought through all the scenarios, good, bad, and otherwise, I don't think you'll have any problems. I'm saying that as somebody who's had problems, because I never thought it through in the beginning. I was a deluded optimist. I don't wish that for you.
Okay. Great advice. It sounds to me like you're not soured at all on joint ventures.
Well, I'm not. I just think, no. I mean, if something goes wrong, I don't believe in people being – I think there are victims in things like earthquakes and hurricanes and tornadoes. But I don't think in business most of us who have reversals are really victims. I think – most of the activities that happened came from either our own actions or our own inactions, if that makes sense.
Okay.
I think we should think about that, because it's silly to blame yourself or blame others. It's better to improve and use it as a learning process.
Turn the tape over now for more of the program on Side 2. Okay, good. All right, let's get to another Wizard's Edge 100 question.
A lot of people say, Jay, you talk about PI or PO, where you go to an advertising medium, you go to a radio station, or you go to a magazine, or you go to a newspaper, or you go to a TV station, you go to the cable, and you try to get them to run your ads and only pay them so much per lead or per order. I've tried to do that, and they've turned me down. What are my other alternatives, if any? And I say, you have many. Number one, ask them if they'll do a guaranteed sale. A guaranteed sale is where you agree to buy a finite amount of time or space, but you both agree what minimum acceptable level of results has to happen for that to be cost justified. And if it doesn't, they have to agree to keep running more ads or commercials until you get to that level. Another approach is to buy a finite amount of space every month or advertising, but have them agree to give you bonus space or spots and give them an override on volume, sales, or profits above a benchmark that occur from that. In other words, they don't want to do PI, you don't want to buy. You come up to that with a compromise. Say, okay, I'll tell you what, you want me to spend $20,000 a month. I don't want to spend $20,000 a month. I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll spend 10 if you'll give me another 10, and on the 10, I'll set a very low base level of gross sales my business has to do every month. Everything above that, I'll give you 3% of the gross. And with no ceiling. So with luck, the extra 10 you give me may earn you 30. Does that make sense?
Okay, yes. It's difficult to know what to do when you try something and don't have anywhere else to go. Those are good suggestions.
Well, the trick you got to realize is just try things.
And a man that I respect greatly one time said something to me, which I have to agree. And I like contemplation, and I like thought, and I like strategic thinking, and I like meditation. But the guy said, in life, so much more is accomplished through movement than is ever accomplished through meditation.
Interesting.
And what he means is, and there's nothing wrong. I mean, I love meditation. It's very soul cleansing. It's very helpful. It's very clarifying. But doing things, if you don't get around to doing things, and so many people in the world are afraid to try, to act, to execute, to implement, to experiment, to test. You've got to be willing to try things. Somebody said many people in my industry are offering reduced prices to buy market share. Should I consider doing that? And how do I make sure I'm not hurting myself by doing this? The only time, in my opinion, you should consider slashing, reducing, lowering price to buy market share is if and when and after you have done your homework and evaluated and understand the marginal net worth, the lifetime value dynamics of your customer, and you know definitively that if you bring on 100 people and don't make a dime or make a very little or lose money, that doesn't matter because of the 100, 43 or 55% or whatever the percentage is will keep coming back and buying at full margin from you 12 times a year. Until unless you know that, just to swap business, I think, is an exercise in futility and absolute stupidity. And I wouldn't do it just to basically – if you can't bring somebody in and ultimately make a profit somewhere along the line, you should evaluate going into a different field of endeavor. I mean, if all you are is a charitable organization, a nonprofit organization selling products and services at below your cost to produce them, and you don't get any profit on any subsequent transaction or additional product or purchase you sell, you should think differently. However, there's a lot of different ways to do it. I have, for example, an associate who's made a very, very nice profit by selling software at cost. I'm actually giving it away. He gives software away. He charges $7 for a piece of software that covers his fulfillment costs, his overhead, and his staff to get it out. He doesn't make any real money, but he just covers his overhead. However, of the 150,000 people who ask for a free piece of software every year, 50,000 buy his updates for $50 a piece.
Hmm.
So he found that it's to his advantage to make it easy to get started and not make money. But unless you have a back end, unless you have a stream of income, unless you have a strategic reason for bringing people in at or below break even or at or below customary margin, I don't see where it gets you anywhere, do you?
No, I don't. That's an interesting concept, too. We talked on the last program about two or three or four-step selling. It seems to me there's a lot of creativity a person could exercise there.
Yes. Somebody said to me, how can I start a company from scratch with a guaranteed customer base? Well, I mean, it's like, that's not a difficult request, is it, Marty? And my answer is, you go to 20 or 30 appropriate host beneficiary type situations, businesses or professionals or organizations or associations or publications that definitely have your target audience, and you get them in advance to agree to introduce you and your emerging business on a priority preferential basis through an endorsed letter to all of their customers. And by doing that, you have the certainty of starting with an absolute base of business within weeks or days or months.
Mm.
That's how I've gotten a lot of companies started.
Wow.
Somebody asked me, what are the legal formalities I must follow when putting your techniques to work? Well, I mean, there's a couple of things. Number one, it's got to be legal. It's got to be moral. It's got to be equitable. It's got to be doable. In other words, if it's illegal, I don't recommend you do it because you're going to get in trouble and get arrested and they're going to take you away. Ha-ha. If it's not equitable to both sides, meaning your customer's got to get great value, your staff has got to get fulfillment and acknowledgement and value, your supplier's got to make enough money to keep happy about it, the product or service you render's got to add to people's lives, you can't do it. If you're doing joint ventures, you want to memorialize them, at least in letter agreement. And they've got to be fair, and they've got to be equitable, and they've got to be reasonable. But reasonable, equitable, fair, those are subjective. Legal is not subjective. Relative to documentation, I tend to prefer letter agreements to intimidating foreboding contracts. It's your preference. I am not an attorney. I'm not giving legal advice. I have tried some very extensive and expansive and extremely protective legal documents, but I've had trouble getting anyone to sign them. And when you produce a 28-page document with 12-page codicil and a 4-page addendum for what seems like a simple transaction like a joint venture agreement or host beneficiary, it causes people to not want to do anything with you. I think you're better off having your attorney work out with you a simple, non-threatening 2- or 4-page letter agreement that states very definitively and very legally in a very specific and binding manner the elements, the issues, the considerations, the facts of the matter, the details of the transaction, the equities, the responsibilities all sides are doing, and who's going to do what and what they're going to receive for it and what is going to happen if they don't, but make it non-threatening. It's easier to do, and most people will easily sign a clear and compelling letter agreement. Most people will be very intimidated by a voluminous contract. There are situations where a contract is essential, a legally binding massive contract, but a legally binding non-intimidating letter agreement is probably more useful for most of you listening to this tape than the alternative, and it's easier to do. I mean, when it comes to it, ultimately, most business has to live or die based on the ethics and the integrity of the people you're transacting business with.
Mm-hmm.
So spirit of the law ultimately will be a factor. Again, I'm not an attorney, but you document things. You document things, and there's no question. There's no confusion. And sometimes when you document things, it's good to have an illustrative example. You have a section on a thing, and you say, for example, if we do a mailing to 1,000 people and it produces 100 customers, and those customers generate $1 million worth of sales over the next 4 years, your 5% would mean you would get paid $50,000 in royalties as it's received, just so you have it real clear.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, that sounds like a very useful technique.
Question is, well, this is another one. It's similar. Will discount prices make my customers not want to buy at regular prices? Yes and no. Depends on how you do it. Keep in mind, you make the rules. You have control 100% of the totality of your transactional situation. You have the right and the opportunity to extend to people a special discount opportunity as a means by which you get them introduced to either your business or another side of your business or another product line or another service. There's nothing at all wrong with saying, on a one-time basis only, we want to introduce non-product users to this product line. So we're offering you the product one time only at half price. Obviously, we don't make any money. Obviously, we can't continue doing business that way. But we feel confident that if you acquire a month's supply and use it in your business operations, you will find such an advantage that you'll never, ever want to do without it. And hopefully you'll appreciate our making this experience available to you and illuminating for you its worth, and you'll be very willing to buy from us at regular pricing thereafter because you know that our prices will be eminently fair and we'll stand behind it always. I mean, that's pretty simple, isn't it?
Yeah, very, very simple.
Yeah, these are pretty good questions, I think. Let me I'm looking through my list to find ones that are really going to be very useful. The question that people ask me all the time is, well, how in the world do I get people I sell to now to purchase more or spend more money with me or buy more often? And I said, you realize that you are manipulating them diabolically if you allow them to buy less quantity, less quality, less frequency, less products or services than they deserve to get the maximum outcome. People say, well, what do you mean, Jay? And I say, well, let's just take a look at what your goal should be. Your goal in life should be to ensure and enrich that every customer or client you serve gets the highest and best result, outcome, benefit, pleasure, protection, advantage out of what you have the capacity through your product or service of bringing to their life or business. If you allow them less than that, you are denying them an incalculable amount of benefit in their life, and that's unacceptable. So if somebody comes to you and wants to buy less than, did I use the example in one of our calls of the glass of water?
I think so, but go ahead and do it again.
I'll do it again. I use a very simple example. Let's pretend that I am Jay Abraham and I own Jay Abraham's bottled water company, and you come to me one day and you want to buy half a glass of water. If I sell you that glass willingly just to take your money, I think I have manipulated you. If I know from all my knowledge and studies that unless you drink 8 full glasses of water a day, your body is going to be denied critical nutrients, critical mineral elements, critical balancing factors. And if you deny that to your body, your brain function will be impaired, your digestive function will be impaired, your elimination function will be impaired. You will feel and act off kilter. Your body will not be performing anywhere close to its capacity. So if on one day you come and you only want a half a glass and I sell it to you without doing everything in my power for you, not me, to persuade you to buy 8 glasses, not one half, I'm manipulating you because I'm accepting your money without really doing the greatest service I know I should for you, without enabling you to get the real benefit. Likewise, if you came back once every 3 days and wanted 8 glasses, but I knew that you needed to drink those 8 glasses every day and I allowed you to buy at that infrequent of a quantity or at that infrequent of a rate without doing everything in my power to persuade you to come every day or buy enough quantity that you would have enough to drink 8 glasses every day, I would be denying your body and your brain and your long-term life its maximum sustenance. Does that make sense?
It makes sense. We've been geared to think the opposite way, as you probably well know.
Yeah, but I think that it's wrong. I think I'll give you a classic example. A couple of years ago, I decided to buy a little computer for our house, and I'm not a computer sophisticate. I'm very illiterate. I went to a typical discount store and bought an Apple Performa. There were 3 models. One was the lowest, one was the middle, one was one with a CD-ROM. I didn't really know what a CD-ROM was, and I asked the man, and it was evident to him that I was flinching at spending the extra $400 or $500, and he said, "Nah, you don't need that. It's not, you know," because I told him what I was doing, and he said, "Yeah, I don't think you'd ever need that," and so I bought the middle of the range without the ROM, and I got home, and about 3 months later, I realized all the things my kids could have done with it and where it's going, and I ended up resenting, actually being angry at that man for not trying harder to persuade me to see and seize the advantage that CD-ROM would have made in my life. I think that that's a point we have to recognize. A point of reference, I did a really incredible interview recently with Fran Tarkenton, the three-time Super Bowl quarterback.
Okay.
And I interviewed him about business building philosophies and strategies because Fran, unbeknownst to most people, has started 8 very successful businesses, all from scratch, all from the dirt, so to speak. Started them all without any external financing, no borrowing. Started them and made them cash flow positive in 45 days or less, which is quite an achievement. But he sold them for a total of more than $200 million, which is pretty remarkable. I interviewed him and asked him to distill down his secret formula, his philosophy for doing business, growing businesses, gaining advantage. And it was so embarrassingly simple, but it's very appropriate here. It's number one is build a relationship because you care about the person. You care about them beyond their wallet or their charge card. You care about their well-being. You care about their family. You care about their happiness. You care about their security. You care about their safety. You care about all those things. Number two, everything you do, make sure it leaves them better off. It makes their life or their situation or their business better off because you've been there. And if all you do is take their money and transact and give them a generic product or commodity, you don't begin to do that, do you?
Mm-hmm.